We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Right now, not an unrelated issue, Brad Mars, who is a former member of the Virginia House of Delegates from Richmond, is with us. He's also a partner in the law firm Mars and Henry. And, you know, Brad, I'm looking at the Richmond Times-Dispatch, the edition that came out this morning. They did decide to print this letter to the editor that you told me you'd be sending. And even if you're a Democrat and you're sympathetic to Governor Northam and the leadership challenge that no doubt he faces, I don't think it's unreasonable for the legal community, the legislative community, the business community to second guess what the governor is mandating. Does he have the authority under Virginia's Constitution to make some of the judgments he's making? The argument that you seem to focus on is whether he actually has the right to declare schools closed across the state, right?
Well, that's the most prominent, because I think that's the one that's affected people the most severely. But there's really a lot in the executive orders and a lot that goes beyond the limitations of the statutes providing emergency powers. The governor has basically just assumed that if he wants to do it, he can do it. You know, and let me be clear. There's always two questions in these situations. The first is, what are the best decisions to make? And the second is, who has the final say about that? Because there's always going to be some range of disagreement on the first thing about what are the best decisions. Did the schools need to be closed for the whole semester this early on? Could we have waited? We've all had those debates. The governor squelched all that debate just by ordering it, saying, this is my opinion and this is what we're going to do. And quite candidly, I don't think he has the power to do that. And I don't know where he got the idea that he has the power to do that. His executive orders do not recite any source of power to do that. So it's quite concerning for anybody, whether you're on the left or the right of the spectrum, if you have any concerns about abuse of power or you know, the complete discarding of checks and balances in our society. You know, you always have to ask, maybe I'm happy with this decision today, but if I give the governor this power and if I create this precedent, how might that be used in the future that I might not like? So we've always got to remain vigilant to make sure we keep our elected officials acting within the limits that we give them.
My default position whenever we get into a conflict like this is to go read the law. You know, regardless of what side I'm on in a debate, what does the law say? So what does the law say about executive orders in a time of crisis? And I guess part of that question is, who gets to declare at a time of crisis? I think we'd agree that we're in that now, but what does the law say currently?
Well, one of the things people should know is if you go to the Virginia General Assembly website, there are links to both the state constitution and our state laws, and they're pretty well organized. I think any person, you don't have to be a lawyer to really follow the reasoning and to see it. But one of the things that people need to understand is, you may be hearing about governor's orders in other states, but Virginia is different from other states. For example, I know when then Governor Bush was running Texas, he claimed a lot of credit for actions he took with the schools, but the schools in Texas are underneath the executive branch. Not so in Virginia. If you go to our state constitution, the schools are a completely separate article of our constitution from the executive branch. And while the State Board of Education has some powers over policies and instruction and content. The management of the schools is, you know, vested in the local school boards very clearly. No one else. There's no power granted to the governor over decisions of opening and closure. There's also nothing in the statutes that really gives him this power either over schools. The statutes he cited deal mostly with the laws of the Board of Health, but the Board of Health doesn't have authority over schools either. So to step into the school situation the way the governor did, to me, was very insensitive to, you know, having respect for local school boards and their ability to make a decision. And I do think his judgment can be questioned. I mean, if you look at every day the Times-Dispatch is publishing a diagram that shows where COVID is in Virginia, and there are still a number of localities that have zero cases and a number of others that have one. So, you know, if a local school board in that locality had decided to stay open until they actually experienced a problem, I don't think the governor was in any position to second-guess their judgment.
Why do you think the school boards haven't challenged that? Are they scared of the public reaction? It does seem, you know, I dare to question the governor's judgment on the radio, and I've gotten a lot of emails from people who are livid with me and basically accusing me of killing people, so I can imagine
some of these elected officials. I think that's sort of the social media era is that, you know, I'm trying to focus on this question of who's making the decision, not what the decision is. But people become immediately very emotional and even angry if you're suggesting that all of these clampdowns might not be appropriate or could be second-guessed by others. You know, I've had this discussion with a lot of people who become immediately, you know, quite loud and angry and just are not really willing to get into the limited powers argument at all. They just want to say, look, stop everything. Lives are at stake. But, you know, this is a long-term thing, and I think we need to be conscious of the fact that if we're creating this as the new normal, the new precedent, you know, we've got to ask ourselves if we're going to go every year or every other year with the governor just shutting down the economy, throwing tens of thousands of Virginians out of work, closing businesses that people have spent their lives building, you know, perhaps never to reopen again. The governor should be weighing all of these considerations, and he should be respectful of the powers that are given to other people and the freedoms that are reserved to the people. You know, for him to just come in here thundering in the way he has, it is really not appropriate and begs for someone to challenge him.
Do you think that those challenges are building, especially as this goes on? I mean, I've been getting emails for the last 24 hours suggesting that the June 10th deadline or the extension to June 10th is not arbitrary, that it's in fact politically motivated to try to disrupt Republicans coming up with political challengers to incumbent Democrats. And honestly, looking at it, trying to come up with an excuse for the governor, I can't find one.
Well, I can't speak to that. I don't know anything about that. But what I will say is, in other states, there have already been suits. You mentioned you're going to have Philip Van Cleave on later. I'm sure he's looking at suits in other states to vindicate gun rights in these situations. There have been suits in other states challenging what is essentially the closure of churches under the constitutional right to free exercise of religion. And one of the things the governor has done there is he's essentially presuming rights of quarantine over all 8.5 million of us. Now, we've got about 1,000 cases known in Virginia, but he's issuing orders that affect all 8.5 million of us. The statutes do not allow that. The statutes require that any orders of quarantine be in the least restrictive way possible. And it's not least restrictive to take 8.5 million people and impose upon them over something that the vast, vast majority of them have possibly not even been exposed to.
Yeah.
So, and one of the interesting sidelights of this is the Board of Health is also very independent of the governor. He appoints them, but they're on staggered terms. And it's sort of a blue ribbon panel of healthcare professionals. They have independent judgment. They don't have to follow the governor's dictates. But the commissioner of health can act when the board is between meetings. So the governor has basically ordered the commissioner of health to do what the governor wants, and then they conveniently canceled the quarterly Board of Health meeting last week so that no one could question what they're doing. I think that's an indication that the governor knows he's on thin ice, and the Board of Health really should have pushed back. I mean, somebody needs to assert their own authority and their own turf, so to speak, so that these limits are observed. Because, you know, if the Board of Health closes down a restaurant, for example, that restaurant can demand an evidentiary hearing. That restaurant can appeal to the courts. Nothing the governor's doing right now gives anyone any sort of ability to challenge it or to have any sort of due process.
It's really interesting that a non-elected official, somebody like you who used to be in the General Assembly, who now no longer, you know, faces the scrutiny of the voters, that you're the person who's coming on the air, you know, illuminating this, and I think very reasonably pushing back on some of the things that are happening. You know, Brad, having in my old role as a communications advisor for a lot of people who were in crisis, certainly not a crisis like this, I can almost imagine, and I don't think this is irresponsible for me to say, I can almost imagine that the advisors to the governor said to him, people will forgive you for an overreach, but they won't forgive you for an underreach if we wind up with stacks of dead bodies all over the state. And
that may very well be. I mean, it's a very tough decision, and that goes to the question of, you know, what is the best decision to make?
Right.
But at the same time, any elected official has to have some humility to know that he is an elected official, not a king. To know that his powers are always limited, no matter which position he holds. And even the governor, with his emergency powers, has limits that he has to observe. That's the only way we can protect ourselves, because right now people have been put out of business, put out of work by press conference.
Yeah. It's an important conversation to have, and the practical realities are really damning for a lot of people outside of the virus. Brad Mars, who is with the Mars and Henry, a law firm, a former member of the House of Delegates in Virginia. I really appreciate you coming on to talk about this. And
I'm glad to come on, and I hope some of the loyal opposition people start speaking up. We need them to assert leadership in this area as well.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like the governor has some questions to answer respectfully, and I will reissue the invitation for him or a member of his administration to come on the air and talk through this. I think there's some legitimate questions that, you know, maybe they've got answers for, but, you know, they need to answer that. Brad, thank you very much.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.